when we sit down to practice, it's so natural for the mind to have a vision of how this period of meditation is supposed to go. How this retreat is supposed to go. How this life is supposed to go. But meditation isn't supposed to go any particular way. And however it goes, there are ways we can benefit and nourish goodness. So sometimes things are smooth, and we can just enjoy and let go into the joy. And sometimes we learn, and sometimes we're softened. And sometimes we suffer a lot and perhaps are humbled. But simply being here, being still and silent together, there's goodness accruing. Whatever is happening at the surface level of the mind, whatever skirmishes we might be having with the moment, however we're evaluating our concentration, goodness is accruing just in being in this field of wholesome intention. And so your responsibilities are actually extremely modest. We show up not knowing how this moment, this experience, might change us, but we're willing to be impacted, to be affected by life, by the tides of pleasure and pain. In order to feel more of the present moment, we relax. It's like sometimes our bracing is an attempt to quarantine the moment. But we relax the area around the eyes, and the jaw. Letting the whole face soften. The face is so closely associated with who we think we are. But in practice, it's just another part of the body. Another field of sensation. And it can be relaxed. Letting any tension from the shoulders drain down. Letting the posture be dignified, but the belly be soft. As the spine ever so gently reaches up towards the sky, we surrender the rest of the body to the soothing quality of gravity, downward pull of the earth. And receive the field of sensation that we call the body in awareness. in any given moment, many things are right and many things are wrong. We offer ourselves the luxury of not needing to sort all of that out, but instead to make a kind of truce with the imperfection of the human condition. Within this field of sensation, it may feel natural to gently narrow the scope of attention to the sensations associated with breathing. So you might sense the breath at the mouth or nostrils, or the abdomen, the You might sense the breath as the sensations cascade across the whole body. Sometimes it can be useful to be precise in noticing the beginning and ending of the inhale, beginning and ending of the exhale. It's so natural, even beautiful maybe, that the mind tries to protect us and runs off foraging for pleasure or trying to insulate us from pain or risk. Compulsively trying to keep us safe. And the best way the mind knows how to do that is to think, to lick the wounds of the past, to imagine, simulate the future. We can be grateful that we have this capacity. But here it's okay. It's safe just to rest in this undefended way with the breath. I heard a phrase that one teacher used about practice to cook one's life. And there's something about retreat that is we're cooking something. We're actually surrendering to the structure, the schedule, the day, the rhythms of sitting and walking, folding it all in. And there's a way that the kind of logic of the practice is to, we don't actually need to understand what's happening. We just keep showing up for the moment. And a kind of momentum of understanding, of softening happens as we keep surrendering to the form of the retreat. There's a real kind of strong tendency to sort of keep checking how things are going, how the cooking is going. It's like when I make you guys oatmeal, I get kind of paranoid that like maybe the laws of thermodynamics have ceased, and so I have to check the pot, you know, just to see. Are the oats still absorbing the water? Yeah. And in the same way with our practice, we like check in compulsively, like, okay, how's the cooking going? Yeah. But it's okay to relax that and just to keep showing up. And the momentum that we're cultivating, it builds through the kind of continuity of sincerity. And that means that we're really blanketing the day with mindfulness or some wholesome qualities. It's like sometimes there's a kind of longing almost for the cocoon of unconsciousness. We sit, the bell rings, and there's like, kind of, there can be a way in which we want to go home to that place in the mind where that feels like sort of headquarters, yeah? The kind of, it feels like a location where discursive thinking happens, and it's a very familiar, cozy kind of voice. And it's fine that there's that longing for the kind of familiarity of the self story. And we practice in a gentle way with continuity. So the bell rings, and there's some transition, and then we move into walking. And in a way, you know, in an important sense, like all the bells, the bell ringing that we're doing, the bell that we ring up here, like at some level, like all of that is show business. You know, it's like it's actually nothing's happening today except we kind of like eat and do some work and offer our awareness the whole time, yeah? And That means that the kind of divisions in our mind between sitting and transitioning and walking, they really are artificial. And it is entirely conceivable that you'll learn more about yourself in attending to how you get to your walking spot than you will from anything that we say the whole week. And this doesn't have to be a kind of like rigid way of holding our life or attending, but a kind of relaxed, patient, receptive awareness and seeing how the mind functions as we move about our day. And so we build some momentum by the, you know, nourishing this continuity. And walking is part of that. So there's one function of it is to change the posture and to open the channels of the body. And it's a practice of cultivating awareness. And so in the walking periods, generally we pick a stretch of some 10 to 15 paces and we're walking back and forth and in some ways where, you know, where the breath was, there the sensations of the feet shall be. The actual sense of the lifting, swinging, placing, the movement of walking. And you may walk at a, you know, at a kind of, generally we walk at a slower pace, but you actually really want to tune in a genuine personal way to what's the actual speed of movement that facilitates mindfulness. What actually supports awareness, and that may change over the course of the retreat. Part of what we're learning to do in walking is it's a little bit of a bridge between the formal eyes closed sitting practice and our lives, our daily lives. And so this means that we're moving, of course, and we have the visual field in play also. And the visual field is so compelling, like this such so dense with associative thinking that it's easy to the visual field is so evocative. And so when I walk, there's usually some sense of just like opening to the fact that, yeah, in some sense that's the world, but it's mediated through perception, and that we can be aware that we're actually seeing, that that's an experience. And it's not to dispute the reality of the external world, but it's an experience. We're experiencing seeing. Yeah. And just that subtle move from looking in an unconscious way to the experience of knowing that we're seeing sometimes cuts through some of the kind of mental proliferation. Now, as we walk back and forth, we at some point the kind of some sense of aimlessness dawns on us. You know, in the sitting, it feels like maybe we're getting something done, But walking back and forth, that's boring. Yeah. And some of what we're actually developing is equanimity with boredom. Yeah. I think Stephen Levine said, like, if you can't be bored, you can't be Buddhist. Something like that. Like, this is actually a pervasive phenomena, the sense of, like, hunger for more stimulation. Yeah. And normally we reach out to more for more stimulation, yeah? And here we're actually reaching down into the sensations of the feet. Yeah. Because that's only boring at the surface level. Sometimes it can be good, just in the same way that we highlight, like, the beginning and ending of the inhale and exhale. Sometimes I'll walk and attend to particular toes. Yeah, like, I'll just, with each step, attend to one toe, or I'll sort of, like, move up and down the toes to just try to be more precise with the actual attention. And it's a little bit of a kind of game to keep my attention more involved. But you can see what happens when you narrow the scope of attention to just a toe or something like that, or you broaden it to actually feel the whole leg moving through space. And sometimes it really will feel like nothing's happening. I'm just walking and, you know, maybe quite distracted. But the proximate cause of mindfulness is mindfulness. Yeah? And it's like, to the extent that we can be nourishing some continuity, that changes what it's like to come back and sit. Yeah. And some of that momentum you won't actually be able to always sense, but it's gathering. Yeah. So you're welcome to walk in this hall, the walking hall here, and we walk the short way, or anywhere outside the deck overlooking the forest, on the porch, anywhere. We'll keep this hall just for sitting, but pretty much anywhere else you're welcome. And then you'll hear a bell and we'll come back and sit again. Okay, thank you.